was praying, seeking, asking the Lord what we need to be doing as a church, where our focus needed to be, as I felt him speaking to me, there were two areas. The first area that I felt like that he told me is that we needed to be responsible in youth and children's ministry, and that was something that I felt like had been a focus, and it was a focus that we were doing. And then in the fall, I had the privilege to go to an Orange Strategy Conference with many of our children's workers and leaders, and get some firsthand look at some of the things that we're doing. And I wore my orange shirt today in honor of Orange Strategy. But anyway, children's ministry is one of those things that everybody has an idea. And I'm going to be sharing in a moment, and Rob's up here to share something as we've put together things. When I've thought of children's ministry through the years and dealing with pastors and other people, I kind of just had a frame of mind that we were building children for the future. And then, again, in a moment I'll say something. Rob's going to come and share what he shared. But Rob made a statement that just changed my focus altogether and realized some things, and I'll bring that later. But it just really was a confirmation to me that we need to be focused continually on what we're doing in children's lives and making a place for them. And as we're going to see today and what we're trying to do, What's My Name, you'll hear some things that I think will impact you in that way. The second part of that vision that I have for 2020 and what God wants us to do is that we as a church have to become more involved in what's happening with the drug addiction and opiate crisis that's in our community and in our lives. A few weeks ago, we experienced numerous deaths in our community. This is not something that's new by any means. It's something that's been ongoing. And I do a lot of funerals in this community, and I can stand before you with much emotion and say, I'm tired of doing premature deaths. And I love the opportunity to love people and minister to him at a crisis time, but I'm just telling you, it's not God's will and it's not God's plan, and I want to hear the word of God and the voice of God on what we need to be doing. And we have the means as a church, facilities, and so on, to do some things that we need to do. Our CR team is believing and working diligently to prepare and do things. We're trying to get people educated in those areas. I told you this a few months ago. I attended a thing that's going on in Huntington of a man there that you know, was an addict, spent time in jail. The Lord saved him, and he's doing a phenomenal work with multiple churches in that community. And I went to a service, and he looked me clear in the eye, and he says, "You're a pastor. Addicts will not listen to you like they will somebody who's been there and knows something and done that." And I've been praying, God, you've got to raise up somebody in this community that I can help and support and teach, who can make a difference in people's lives. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's somebody that can do that. And we have the means and facilities that can help do that. And it's something that's important for us to recognize and make it clear. Where we worship and what we do belongs to God, not us. This is God's house. It's not mine and yours. It's God's. It's God's property. Everything that we have is the Lord's. And so I just want you to be aware that that's dear to my heart. These are the things we're going to be focusing on the later part of the year. We'll be doing some stuff. I'm going to keep you informed of what's going on. But I want you to realize how important children's ministry is and what we do with these kids. Bringing them in here is a fun time. It's an exciting time. I realize that some of us are old fuddy-duddies, and it aggravates you and it frustrates you. But Jesus said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me." You may have to suffer for the children to come. But I want them here. I want them to feel a part of what's going on. And I want them to know that they're welcome to be here. You know, I watched this video at 5:30 this morning. And I thought, man, I'd like to show that. You know, I just want to do something to excite the kids. I saw it was Walt Disney. And I know people judge stuff and say, well, that ain't Christian music. I got these in my notes, but I'm going to say it right now to you. If you think deeper worship songs and deeper prayer is what's going to set the child and the drug addict in a closer relationship with the Lord, you're a little shallow. The story of Jesus is not a story of us going to heaven to find God. It's a story of God coming to earth to relate to mankind. That's the story of Jesus. He came to this earth to relate to us. And some of us need to get off our high horses and relate to those who are around us. A simple little thing of knowing a child's name. Now again, this couple of weeks ago, a statement Rob Frank made, we'll talk about that here in just a moment, but it prompted me to realize that children don't have a ministry in the future. Children have got a ministry today, right where they are. You may have seen, I saw this on Facebook, posted it or shared it so that people could see it, but I want to read it to us this morning because some of y'all don't know the joy of Facebook and reading how stupid people are. Some good stuff on there too. The boy put his clothes for the cold on and told his father, "Okay, Dad, I'm ready." His dad, the pastor, said, "Ready for what?" "Dad, it's time to go outside and distribute our flyers." Dad replied, "Son, it's very cold outside and it's drizzling." The child looked surprised at his father and said, "But Dad, people need to know about God even on rainy days." Dad replied, "Son, I'm not going outside in this weather." So with despair, the child replied, the child said, "Dad, can I go alone, please?" His father waited for a moment and then said, "Son, you can go. Here's the flyers. Be careful." The boy said, "Thank you, Dad." With this, the son went out into the rain. The 11-year-old, walked all the streets of the village handing out flyers to the people he saw. 2 hours after walking in the rain and in the cold, and with his last flyer in his hand, he stopped in a corner to see if he saw someone to give the last flyer to. But the streets were totally deserted. Then he turned to the first house he saw, walked to the door, touched the bell several times, and waited, but no one came out. Finally, the boy turned to leave, but something stopped him. The child turned back to the door and began to touch the bell and pound the door strongly with his knuckles. He kept waiting. Finally, the door was opened gently. A lady came out with a very sad look and gently asked, "What can I do for you, son?" With radiant eyes and a bright smile, the child said, "Lady, I'm sorry if I have upset you, but I just want to tell you that God really loves you and that I came to give you my last flyer, which talks about God and His great love." The boy then gives her the flyer. She just said, "Thank you, son. God bless you." Well, the next Sunday morning, the pastor was in the pulpit, and when the service began, he asked, "Does anyone have a testimony or something they want to share?" Gently, in the back row of the church, an old lady stood up. When she started talking, a radiant and glorious look sprouted from her eyes. "Nobody in this church knows me. I have never been here. Even last Sunday, I was not a Christian. My husband died a while back, leaving me totally alone in this world. Last Sunday was a particularly cold and rainy day, and it was also in my heart that on that day I had come to the end of the road since I had no hope and didn't want to live anymore. Then I took a chair and a rope and went up to the attic of my house. I tied one end of the rope to the rafters of the roof. Then I climbed onto the chair and put the other end of the rope around my neck. I then stood on the chair, so alone and heartbroken. I was about to throw myself off the chair when suddenly I heard the sound of a loud knock at my door. So I thought, I'll wait for a minute and whoever it is will go away. I waited and waited, but the door knocking was getting louder and louder every time. It got so loud I couldn't ignore it anymore. So I wondered, who could that be? No one has ever come close to my door or come to visit me. I released the rope from my neck and went to the door. While the bell was still ringing, the door was still being knocked on. When I opened the door, I couldn't believe what my eyes saw. In front of my door was the most radiant and angelic child I'd ever seen. His smile, oh, I can never describe it. The words that came out of his mouth made my heart dead for so long come back to life. When he said with the voice of a cherub, "Lady, I just want to tell you that God really loves you." When the little angel disappeared between the cold and the rain, I closed my door and read every word of the flyer. Then I went to the attic to remove the chair and rope. I didn't need them anymore. As you can see, now I am a happy daughter of the King. As the direction of the boy when he left was to this church, I came personally to thank you, to say thank you to that little angel of God who just came in time and in fact came to rescue my life from an eternity in hell and replaced it with an eternity in God's presence. Everyone in the church cried. The pastor came down from the pulpit to the first bench of the front where the little angel was sitting. He took his son in his arms and cried uncontrollably. The title of this series that we're talking about is Making It Personal. We live in a society today and in a time today where we don't always take the time to personally know people we come in contact with. Some of us come here to church week in, week out, and we don't know kids. How many of you know Cohen? You see your hand. How many of you know Cohen? Cohen's the little blonde that was all over the stage and everywhere. God may ignite a boldness in him for Christ that all of us need to know. We can sit around and look and say, well, this is how it should be, that's how it should be. If you think this world's anything like the way it should be, all you got to go on is your opinion of how it should be. And the chances are how you think it should be ain't right. You ain't supposed to say ain't if you use good English, but I say ain't. It ain't right. You know, listen to me. Young people need to grow up knowing they're made in the image of God. They need to grow up knowing that they are loved by Jesus and by other people in the world. They need to know that they have an ability to love others. But they're never going to understand that they're loved and what love looks like unless they see love demonstrated in action and unless they have a few adults who demonstrate what love means. How do you demonstrate it? Again, as I said, when I went to this Orange Strategy last fall, and I saw one of the things, it was so personal, it was just incredible to me. But the way you do it is you make it personal. Make it personal. The result of personal ministry is hope. Hope. Jesus was personal. He touched people who had diseases, who you weren't supposed to touch. He spoke respectfully to scandalous women. He wept at the loss of a friend. He broke a rule to get someone out of trouble. He met leaders privately in the middle of the night. He washed the disciples' feet. He invited himself to a wild party. He prayed with toddlers. Why? Because Jesus didn't see humans the way average humans see humans. Jesus had the ability to honor those who were disgraced. He befriended those who were marginalized. He embraced those who had been rejected. He forgave those who had sinned. He believed in those who were broken. Listen carefully to this statement. Jesus never got so busy trying to save everyone that he wouldn't stop and help someone. I don't want to be a notch in somebody's belt. No one ever really imagined how personal interaction, the personal interaction of Jesus with one man would change an entire city. We're going to look several times this week. One of the greatest salvation stories there is in Scripture is the story of a guy who was the chief tax collector in the community, who was hated by everyone, who was despised because of how ruthless he was, how big a crook he was. He tried every way in the world he could to get to Jesus, and he was a little guy, you know, short. He couldn't get there because of the crowds, and nobody there probably liked him. They probably were keeping him away anyway. So he goes ahead and he climbs a tree, and Jesus, as he comes up, calls that man by name. Lazarus, come down. I don't know what happened to Lazarus, or Zacchaeus. I don't know why I keep saying Lazarus. Terrible with a name. I got to learn a name. Zacchaeus, whatever happened to him from the last limb till the time his feet touched the ground, he was a different person. Jesus invited himself to his home. I'm coming home with you, Zacchaeus. And he came into his home. It's just an amazing thing that Zacchaeus changed so much that Jesus said, today salvation has come to your house. You know, there's an epidemic in our nation, an epidemic rise in bullying, emotional abuse, depression, self-harm, suicide among kids and teenagers. And if we think these kinds of issues are going to be resolved by just deeper worship songs, deeper Bible studies, and deeper theological debates, we're pretty shallow. We got to stop and look around. And if we're going to become more than just shallow Christians, we're going to have to become personal and listen to what people say. If you'll catch what Reggie said, he just wants people to show up. Just show up. Be there. Can someone call you? Can they talk to you? Can we put the slide up that shows all five things we're going to deal with these next 5 weeks, these next 5 weeks? Today we're dealing with, do you know my name? The second will be, do you know what matters to me? The third one will be, do you know where I live? Do you know what I've done? Do you know what I can do? Do you know how many kids have done things that they thank God and nobody will love them because of what they've done? Do you know my name? I want Rob to come and share what he shared that touched my life about understanding an aspect of kids and what he dealt with Maya, and then he's going to share another story with you. Make Rob welcome, would you?
This might be a little bit difficult for me to get through, because when you think of the name on the front of the card, when you think of the people who show up for you, it's an emotional thing, particularly when they show up in a way that really makes a difference. But before I begin, I just kind of like to just acknowledge that there are empty seats here that would be filled by people who are in the Rock Building showing up. The Rock Building showing up. The Kingdom Kids Building showing up. Across the hall with the young adults. The seats are empty because there are people in this congregation that are showing up. And that's an incredible and important thing. About 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, I don't even remember how long ago, we took Maya to Boston for the Landmark Forum for Young People. Now, Landmark Education is an ontological study about, you know, who you are and why you're that way. And they have a program for young people. And it's run kind of like a small group is here in the church, where the things that you talk about within that small group, they're private, and they stay in that small group, and the parents don't attend the sessions. But they have a session for the parents so that the parents can gain an understanding of what's being discussed with the kids and what is important to the kids. And the session for the parents was taught by an incredibly extraordinary man. He is the leader of the Landmark Forum for Teens. He's based out of Houston, Texas. He's one of these larger-than-life African-American men with the booming voice and just the presence that, you know, when he walks in there, it's kind of like seeing, you know, one of these beautiful Baptist preachers who with the sonorous voices. And he began going through the things that children go through and the things that children see that we're blind to. And as he began going through what these kids were experiencing, and when he began talking it through, it became apparent that I'd been making a huge mistake with my child. You see, I always saw childhood as a training ground to be an adult. I never passed up an opportunity to take whatever was occurring and make it a life lesson for my daughter. And I could make anything into a life lesson, because it was my responsibility to train her up for her future life, train her how to be a positive and good adult. And it's true that we as parents need to do that, but that's too narrow of a view. You see, while I was training Maya for the future, she was living her life now. I missed the point that childhood isn't some training ground for the future. Childhood is our children's lives. It's where they are. And when we forget that where they are now is where they're living, we lose a lot. We lose the opportunity to be there and to be part of it. We lose learning that, you know, kindness is more important than a lesson. And sometime playing, is more important than the sheets that they give us to teach when we're teaching in Rock. We forget that a well-worn stuffed giraffe is more important than all the gold in the world. We lose the perspective that a day spent on the couch watching videos that are silly is more important than the day at the office. That time spent with a child is more important than time at the office. When we think of just training our children up rather than living into their lives where they are, we miss out and they miss out. You know, I think back to my own childhood and my dad, and my dad taught me very many important lessons: hard work and toughness and perseverance and honesty. But when I think back and I remember, the things that I remember the most are the morning where he woke me up. I shared a room with my brother, but my dad woke me up and we went and chased hot air balloons. Why is that so important? Because he was reaching out to me. He was making it personal. He could have woke my sister and my brother up, but he didn't. He just woke me up. He made it personal. And I'll never forget chasing hot air balloons or going fishing and digging up this little tiny tree that, when my parents passed away, was 80 feet tall. He made it personal. And I learned I need to make it personal with my kid. I need to understand that her life is what she is living now, and I am blessed to get to live into it. Now, there is a man whose name I would write on the back of the card when I am asked the question, who'd show up for you? And his name is Roger Pennington. We never called him Roger Pennington. He was Coach Pennington. Coach Pennington came from a large Catholic family. He had 5 boys and 3 daughters in a 3-bedroom home. They were the kind of devout Catholics that Coach Pennington, he would go to Mass every morning before he went to work. And one of his sons was my school's Sam McClung. We called him Moose. And Moose was about 6'4", 280 pounds. And that was in kindergarten. And we grew up as friends through kindergarten and all the way through our junior year of high school. And Coach Pennington coached our football teams when we were kids. The 6th, 7th, and the 8th grade, we had just an incredible team. And it wasn't incredible because of the X's and O's. It wasn't incredible because we had great athletes. I think we had one kid who was an athlete, and it wasn't me. It was great because Coach Pennington and Coach Hayes and Coach Quintana, they took the time to get to know us. They knew that Greg and Gary were going to show up late for practice using their paper route as an excuse so they didn't have to run laps. They knew that. They let it slide. They knew that many of the kids on the team didn't have the resources, the economic resources, even to have to buy mouth guards. So he made sure every kid had a mouth guard. He knew where we lived, because oftentimes he would take us home at night when nobody would show up to get us. And he knew what we were about. He was just an incredible, incredible coach. As we went through high school, his son Moose, he had 3 things that were important to him. He lifted weights, he played football, and he worshiped God. You see, Pat had his life planned out. He was going to go play football for Notre Dame, and then he was going to go into the priesthood and become a Catholic priest. And Moose was very honest. I remember one time telling him I wanted to join the swim team. He told me I was too fat. I probably shouldn't do that. He was a great guy. One morning, Pat and a couple of our other friends went fishing at 11 Mile Canyon, and a storm was coming in. We were juniors in high school. And so Pat decided to climb up the side of the canyon to kind of get an idea as to what the storm was going to be about, whether they needed to pack up and get out. Well, he fell and was injured very badly. He was injured badly enough that they brought a helicopter in from Fort Carson to fly him out of the canyon and try to get him health care. They loaded him in the canyon, and they had the 2 pilots and the medics. And on the way out of the canyon, the helicopter clipped some trees and crashed, and no one on board survived. And it was tough to lose a teammate and a friend. But it's even tougher for a father to lose a son. And I remember being at Pat's wake with all of us there. And Coach Pennington, through his morning, was ministering to us. He was making sure we would be okay. And you know what else? They scheduled Moose's wake around our high school football game so that he could show up, because he never missed a game. And he didn't miss a game when his own son died. And he didn't miss one after that. And his younger son, Paul, the youngest, he played football with my brother, and he didn't miss any of my brother's games either. That's what showing up is. That's what making a difference is. He knew where we were. He knew what we were. He knew what we were capable of. And the things he taught us, especially in defeat, about holding our heads high. He knew all of us. And he made us better. Now, sitting down and thinking about this and thinking about the card, I decided I'd write Coach Pennington a letter, and I just, if y'all don't mind, I think I'll share it with you. Coach Pennington, it's been since 1982 at Pat's wake since we spoke. It was my honor to know him, and I still think of him often. I was blessed to have you as my football coach and have Moose as my friend and teammate. I played on the team that you coached with Coach Hayes and Coach Quintana. I was on the team with Moose and Mark Hayes and Dennis Quintana and Greg Bell and Gary Wallace. I just wanted to drop you a note to thank you for the difference you made in my life. You may not realize it, but just being there for a group of young men for practices and games and the uncounted hours spent preparing meant so much. You instilled in us teamwork and discipline, a work ethic, and a love for the joy of the game. You supported us, had confidence in us, and taught us to hold our heads high even in defeat. You taught us honesty and sportsmanship and toughness. You helped us become men. But mostly, you knew our names. I know that seems like a small thing, but it's not. The world can be dehumanizing, especially to a kid. To have a relationship with an adult who can mentor you and teach you, who knows who you are and has confidence in you, are very big things. You made all of us feel important. You made all of us better. You made a difference. You served God's purpose. It means more than I can express, and I thank you. I'm married now and living in West Virginia. I have a 10-year-old daughter who's crazy and energetic. I practice law and have had some considerable success doing so, in part due to the things I learned from you. I see Greg Bell and Gary Wallace frequently. Greg lives in Tampa and is still mostly crazy like he was when he was a kid. Gary lives in South Carolina with his wife and her two sons, who he raised. My friend Gary showed up for his wife's children. They call him Dad. He's like Coach Pennington. When we get together, we often talk about our teams, running the single wing, the Moose up the middle. When we were on the goal line, we'd stick Moose in the backfield and just hand him the ball, and he just runs straight up the middle. Greg's many runs and hits, Gary's lone interception. Gary had hands like feet. He couldn't catch a cold. And we speak of our coaches, of you and the impact you had in our lives. Thank you for all you have given to us. Thanks for knowing my name. It means so much. Robbie Frank. Coach Pennington showed up for me. Who are y'all going to show up for? Thank you.
Do you know my name? I was preparing for this sermon today, this lesson today, and on Friday, gone down Thursday night to spend some time with my dad. spending time with him right now is very important to me, very important. You'll say, I know you got stuff to do. Dad, I just want to be here. At Christmas, he said, you need to go over to the church, to the office, and before anybody gets anything, I want you to go to the office and get anything you want out of my office before anybody else. I had no desire to do that. I didn't want to go to his office. But again, 2 weeks ago when I was down, he said, I really want you to go to the office. I'm not going to be back there. Friday, Millie handed me an empty tote, and she said, take this and just get the personal things you want. My dad has a vast library. Almost everything that's in there, you can get on your phone in about half a second. You understand, he doesn't comprehend. He thinks I need all those books. But I got to the door, and you have to push a button, just like you do here when you come. You got to push a button, and I pushed a button, the lady come to the door, and I'm standing there with an empty tote in my hand, and she cracks the door, and she says, can I help you? I said, yeah, I'm Stuart Farley, and I'd like to go to Pastor Farley's office. She just stared at me, didn't move. Never backed up, never opened the door. Finally, the administrator of the church was coming down the hall, and he said, Stuart. When he said my name, she opened the door and kind of made room for me to come in. The man who had built everything that was there wanted me to go. And I'm trying to understand what it is for somebody to not know your name. When I walk in here, most people know my name. When I walk around the community, most people know my name. But I stood there Friday, this 2 days ago, and she didn't know my name. She felt so bad. She came in. She said, I look at you now, and how did I not know who you were? I'm sorry. I said, it's fine. She said, is your daddy really not coming back to the office? The lady who cleans the church come by and she said, is Brother Farley, is what they call it. Is Brother Farley not going to be back? I said, bar a miracle. How many kids need somebody to just know who they are, believe in them, and show up for them? We got a world that's hurting. Sometimes people do a lot of bad things, but how many good kids or bad kids need somebody to just believe in them, be there for them, and help them? Rob, I want to be a Coach Pennington in somebody's life. I want to impact somebody for God. Amen? Rod, I'm glad you're here today. I'm glad I know you. Do you know everybody around you? I don't know everybody's name like I should. But we need to learn. Lord, help us to make church personal, to make knowing you a personal thing. Lord, you know every situation and every circumstance here personally. You know what it is to be in the heart and the life of every person sitting in this building. Lord, we need to know each other better. And we need to make a relationship with you, a personal relationship, not just a series of obeying rules. Help us, Lord, to be personal.